The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Friday, January 21st, 2022. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlanda is here with me, and we will start with the biggest story in college basketball from Thursday night, which was Penny Hardaway's F-word-filled press conference that followed Memphis's latest disappointing loss, this time an 8-point loss at home to SMU. It was a game they were favored to win by 6. Jeff Calkins, you know Jeff Calkins, longtime columnist in Memphis, now at the Daily Memphian. He asked Penny after the game if he has ever lost faith that he can get it done at Memphis and whether he's ever embarrassed when the Tigers, for instance, only scored 2 points in the first 9 minutes of a nationally televised game against an SMU team that isn't even a good defensive team. Among other things, Penny told Calkins to stop asking him stupid effing questions. Here's what it sounded like.
I think the one thing I can say to this media, because this media gets kind of up sometimes when it comes to me, we don't have our full roster. Y'all know we don't have our full roster. Stop asking me stupid questions about if I feel like I can do something. If I had my roster like they did, then I feel like I can do whatever I want to do. I'm coaching really hard. My boys are playing really hard. I'm not embarrassed about nothing. We have 4 freshmen starting. Y'all need to act like it. Act like we got 17 to 18 and 19 year olds out here trying to learn how to play against 22, 23 and 24 year old guys. Come on, man. Stop disrespecting me, bro. Like, don't do that. I work too hard. I work way too hard for that. Y'all write all these articles about me, and all I do is work. We got young kids on the floor. They got young kids on the floor.
Dead leg, your thoughts.
It's coming apart in Memphis, man. These kinds of press conferences are often, not always, but they are often indicators that an end could be near. Completely unacceptable by Penny Hardaway, man. I'm going to state the obvious here, but you're the one responsible for the roster. Yeah, there's injury issues. Just earlier this week, I talked to another coach in your league down in Texas, Kelvin Sampson at Houston. Awesome again, 16-2. Doesn't have 2 of his 3 best players for the remainder of the season, and it hasn't slowed that Houston program whatsoever. Talked to Sampson about these same exact issues. There's no excuses. Now, obviously, I caught Sampson in a good mood after they pasted South Florida earlier in the week. You know, less than an hour after that game finished. Penny's going to be pissed because they lost again. This thing has spiraled out of control. But he's the one that put this roster together. Doesn't even have one of his coaches anymore. Rasheed Wallace is no longer an acting assistant coach. It's not working. And normally Memphis wouldn't even be worth kind of getting into. And in fact, we kind of briefly debated even doing it. But then Penny Hardaway in his post-game press conference, he solidified it for us. Because all this does is sheds more light on how much dysfunction is happening. Yeah, I understand that the Tigers don't have their full allotment of players. Yes, they are loaded up with freshmen. By the way, a couple of which will be NBA picks. Jalen Duren will be in the lottery. Amani Bates, whenever he goes, I mean, he hasn't looked like a first-round pick to this point, but give him a little more time. But you still recruited them to this roster. You built it. It's on you. You have not yet coached in the NCAA tournament. You haven't had an NCAA tournament-level team. You still don't have an NCAA tournament-level team. So Penny Hardaway choosing to go after the media, it's not the media's fault that the team's in the spot that it's in, man. And I know not of all of it's Penny's fault because of the injury situations. I get all that, but boy, this is not a good look. So those are my quick thoughts. I'd like yours. And I would also like to ask you just by pure nature of where you're at. I mean, you're sitting in your house in Mississippi, just a stone's throw away from the Memphis city limits here. Like, I don't know. I don't think this is an overreaction. Like, Paris, is there a chance that we could actually see a coaching change within the next 8 to 10 weeks at that program, or we think they'll go with Penny for at least one more season? Because stuff like this, these kind of pressers, I mean, they certainly reveal plenty of issues. And I know Penny was probably venting, but I don't know, man. Like, it's getting worse by the week here.
It is getting worse by the week. I suppose there's a chance there could be a coaching change. I would not anticipate that. I wouldn't bet on it. This is a cash-strapped athletic department. They A, don't want to fire Penny Hardaway, and B, I don't even know if they got the money to do it. And so I think the most likely scenario is that they just ride it out and hope that, you know, year five is different than year one, two, three, and four. At this point, obviously, people are losing optimism. You know, some of the hardcore are starting to lose faith, understandably so. But I'll be surprised. I guess I put it this way. If Penny Hardaway wants to be the coach at Memphis next season, I'm going to assume that he's going to be the coach at Memphis next season. But if there's another season like this season, year six probably wouldn't follow year five. The problem with Penny pointing out that if he had his full roster, he believes he would be able to do whatever he wanted to do, is that he had his full roster for a good portion of the season. The first 10 games, they started 6-4. They were 6-4 with their full roster, with losses to Georgia on the road, Murray State at home. And shorthanded or not, Memphis has been favored at tip-off in all 8 games that the Tigers have lost, including last night. At tip-off, they were still a 6-point favorite, even shorthanded. They've lost this season to East Carolina and Tulane. You know, Penny still had Landers Nolly, Earl Timberlake, Lester Quinones, Tyler Harris, Alex Lomax, and Josh Minot at Tulane. Lost. Still had Jalen Dern, Amani Bates, Earl Timberlake, Lester Quinones, Josh Minot, Tyler Harris at East Carolina. Lost. Like, here's the question people are asking. Shouldn't having 3 projected first-round NBA draft picks be enough to beat East Carolina? That's all anybody's asking. Got it. Shorthanded. Still got guys who have shown up in the first round of mock drafts. 3 of them available. Shouldn't you be able to win against that caliber of competition? Memphis has now lost to 4 sub-120 KenPom teams. Ole Miss, which is ranked 122nd, Tulane 132nd, East Carolina 154th, Georgia 222nd. Georgia's 5-13 overall, 0-5 in the SEC. The Bulldogs have lost to East Tennessee State, Gardner-Webb. Still beat full-strength Memphis. Among other things, Penny said last night, as you heard, is, quote, "We have 4 freshmen starting. Y'all need to act like it." First, he didn't start 4 freshmen. That's just not true.
Okay, also good to know.
he started 3 freshmen, plus a 21-year-old sophomore and a 21-year-old junior.
And I'm not saying they're not going up against 24-year-olds. There's just not that many. To phrase that as though they're on a nightly basis, the opposing starting lineup is just, you know, peppered with 23 and 24-year-olds. Again, he's embellishing the point.
He didn't start 4 freshmen. But even if he did, like, that's his decision. You make the roster, you make the starting lineup. If you don't want to be this reliant on freshmen, I don't know, maybe prioritize older players in the transfer portal rather than a 17-year-old Imani Bates. Like, the missteps are undeniably starting to add up. You know, Penny didn't enroll a high major point guard in advance of this season, which left Alex Lomax as the only real point guard on the roster, and he's just not good enough. You know, Penny didn't anticipate the possible chemistry issues that could arise by adding 2 5-star freshmen very late in the calendar who were going to take minutes and shots away from the 2 guys who were the best 2 players on last season's team, DeAndre Williams and Landers Nolly. He didn't focus at all on getting his players vaccinated in advance of this season, which led to contact tracing, not breakthrough cases, but contact tracing of unvaccinated players, costing Memphis games and making them play shorthanded. He hired an apparent anti-vaxxer in Rasheed Wallace as an assistant coach. Now he's no longer an assistant coach, reportedly because of his refusal to get vaccinated. You know, when the Tigers lost early, Penny said it was because the veterans weren't doing their jobs. When they lose now, he says it's because he doesn't have those veterans. It's just a lot of excuses. Meantime, like you pointed out, Houston lost two of its top four scorers for the season, still hasn't lost a game in this same crummy league. Kelvin Sampson's Cougars are on an 8-game winning streak. Lost two of the top four. No excuses. Just keep winning. Bottom line, it's a mess. And it's getting messier by the day. Everybody in Memphis wants Penny to succeed. But the same people who campaigned for him to get this job are obviously and understandably starting to lose confidence.
As they should. At this point, barring another press conference, I mean, Memphis is now, they've gone from interesting to a bit of a tire fire to outright mess to this might be the last thing. I mean, 9-8, irrelevant. Unless there's going to be more press conference clips to share and to react to, or something significant, you know, on the newswire connected to Duren or Bates, this is it. You know, Memphis is irrelevant. It actually hasn't been this way under Penny previously. 22-14 year one, 21-10 and would have been an NIT team, not quite tournament worthy, 2020 year two. Last season, 20-8, does well for itself, all things considered, wins the NIT tournament. Normally you actually see, I didn't get a chance to look this up in time before our podcast, but normally if a team wins the NIT and brings back, you know, a decent portion of its roster the following season, that usually precludes, portends that that team is going to make the jump, make the leap, be an NCAA tournament team. It's not the case here. Memphis was an elite defensive unit a season ago. That's completely withered away. This team is inept on both ends of the floor there, and Penny Hardaway just can't figure it out. So next up is at Tulsa on Sunday. It's a road game, followed by a return against East Carolina, whatever. At this point, you know, just not a relevant team. Like there's almost no reason to talk about this group anymore. It's I can't believe we reached this point with this team this season, but that's where we're at. And Penny Hardaway fell into the trap that, you know, many have before and many will continue down the road. Like I understand when you're in a high pressure situation at a high profile institution with a team with plenty of talent, a lot of expectations, you're going to hit a point where you just get sick of dealing with the media and the things that are written about you or said about you, they wear on you. Don't blame Penny Hardaway for that. But it just came off like he did not have self-awareness over the issues of the program and tried to project them back on the media when it's not the media's fault. And if anything, this is now a function of the fact that you're the one that said, we want all the smoke. You brought this class into this situation with this team, with this roster, haven't been able to handle it, not been able to coach at the level that many thought you would be able to. And now your locker room's been you've admitted it was a disaster earlier in the season. We don't know if it's any better now or not, but that's where we're at. That's all I got on Memphis. It is surprising it's at this point, and maybe they can put it together, but I mean, who's got any confidence that that's actually going to happen?
Yeah, no, not me. And I can't imagine many. You know, I think you touch on something. Like, he is frustrated with how it's going, frustrated by the media. Keep in mind, this is a guy who's 50 years old, who has been super famous in his hometown since he was like 16.
Yeah.
And has never faced any kind of criticism in any sort of meaningful way in his life. And now he is, for the first time. Like, people who grew up adoring him are now suggesting very publicly that he should be fired. And obviously that's tough to deal with. It would be for me.
I'm not there yet, by the way. I'm not saying Penny should be fired from Memphis, but it's
Oh yeah. I mean, to be clear, I would not fire him. Not today and not at the end of the season.
I'm not there yet. It's not good. I'm just not there yet.
Yeah, I would bring him back for year five and hope that that's the breakthrough season. And after that, everything goes well. I'm not optimistic of that, but that's what I would do for a variety of reasons. Among them, it costs money to get rid of and money that they don't have. So, yeah, I'm not at the Penny should be fired, but there are a lot of people in Memphis who are at the Penny should be fired. It's embarrassing. It's a circus. It's one story after another. Even before Penny's press conference last night, you and Nada and I are in a group text, and you guys reached out to me like, hey, you know, do we need to talk about Memphis tomorrow? They just lost again. And I was like, what else is there to say? Like, they're not any good, and they just proved it again. Like, let's focus on the better teams. And then this press conference happens, and it becomes the biggest story in college basketball. It just was last night. And Memphis has been, for a variety of reasons, one of the biggest stories in the country in the preseason and throughout the season. First, because, you know, they get Amani Bates and Jalen Duren. Then they add Larry Brown and Rasheed Wallace. Then they get off to a disappointing start, which is a big story, just like Michigan getting off to a disappointing start. Then they show some signs of life, like beat Alabama, pummel Wichita State. And then we're right back where we are now with Penny having this press conference that went viral last night. So I'm with you. There was no better way to start a college basketball podcast this morning other than with the biggest story from Thursday night, which was Penny Hardaway's press conference. But we're at the point where there's nothing else to say about them. They're just a bad basketball team. And we can spend the rest of the season, hopefully, focused on the good basketball teams. And I'd be interested to get your take on this, because it's something that's been brought up to me and something I think I agree with. One of the points other coaches have made, and by the way, I can't tell you how many coaches text messaged me and said, like, what? Like, you work hard? We're all working hard, you know? Like, what? Like, work differently. Work more effectively. Bragging about working hard is that's not something you should be bragging about. You know, at the end of the day, it's a results-oriented business. It is a fact that they entered this season with a head coach of Penny Hardaway who had never worked on a college campus before he worked on this college campus. Cody Toppert, who had never worked on a college campus until he worked on this college campus. Rasheed Wallace, who had never worked on a college campus until he worked on this college campus. And Larry Brown, who is 81 years old and came to the picture late. And the thing that some other coaches have brought up to me is that, hey, Penny can clearly recruit, and I think he can actually coach, run a practice, do drills, all that stuff. But who on that staff knows how to run a college basketball program in the year 2022? Like, when Penny said, I didn't even really think about getting my players vaccinated, that is so contrary to what every other coach told us in the offseason. It was priority one for everybody. And at Memphis, they just didn't even seem to care. And one of the things that I think has led to all of these missteps is that they don't have anybody on the staff who knows how to run a college basketball program, not coach a basketball team. These are two very different things. Run a college basketball program, and it's come up to bite them time after time after time. You think there's something to that?
Maybe a little bit. Yeah, I think when you get to the and there are intricacies of actually running a college basketball program, and experience can certainly matter. You don't, you know, if you come into a situation where you haven't had experience on a college bench, it just about everyone that has worked in college athletics, I'm not even talking just coaches, I would say athletic directors, people in the college athletic space, they'll say having people that have real experience and some success, a good track record, means something. So, yeah, I think all those things are basically, you know, combining to see what's happening. Now, again, Hardaway did actually have some success previous to it. It's not like this was his first season or anything like that. He actually did have a good program, but it's all just a confluence of events that's I hesitate to say implosion, but this is bad stuff, buddy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
It is bad stuff. Let's move on to some interesting results from the past couple of nights. But before we do, please, if you're watching live right now on YouTube, smash that like button like Brandon Davies would. Smash it. Brandon Davies, Woody Rista, trip to the Final Four. Didn't care. He had an opportunity to smash. He took it in violation of the protocols at his university. He said, I got an opportunity to smash. I'm going to smash. He risked a basketball season. You're not risking anything. It cost you nothing. Smash the like button while you're here, please. Marquette won at Villanova. Indiana upset Purdue. Johnny Juzang got 28 and UCLA 63 points in a win at Utah. Yeah. Those are some interesting developments from the past couple of nights. What stands out from the past two nights to you?
I want to go to Indiana here. Indiana beating Purdue. Well, before I drop a few nuggets on you here, Indiana over Purdue. Yes or no? Biggest regular season win for this program since Christian Watford beat Kentucky in 2012.
Oh, I couldn't. I'm not an Indiana historian, but the last significant Indiana thing I think I remember is Christian Watford hitting the shot against Kentucky. And so last night was Jaden Ivey missing a shot against Indiana. It was a massive win. Like, you know, if for no other reason than the fans seem fired up. You know, the place was packed. It looked great. It is great. It's one of the, I don't know if you've been there for a game. It's one of the great college basketball environments. I mean, it's just when it's filled up and the fans are energized, it's as good as it gets. And so it was an amazing scene, a great win over an in-state rival. And I'm just really happy for that fan base and the like entire state, because you know what they've been going through with those internet problems in Indiana.
No idea, actually.
You didn't hear about this?
No, I didn't hear about it.
Oh, wow. The entire state of Indiana has been without internet this entire season.
Sounds brutal, man.
It's rough. I felt bad for them. Like, I haven't heard from them.
Only within the state borders. Like, it's freaking Ohio, they're good.
Yeah.
Illinois is cruising.
That's right.
But just Indiana.
Right. I hadn't heard from them.
Nobody's
talking about this. I hadn't heard anything from them. Like, after they lost to Syracuse, nobody tweeted me. I was like, there's the internet problems. They don't have internet in Indiana. After they lost to Penn State, nobody tweeted me. But fortunately, just in time for the win over Purdue, they got the internet back in the state. So everybody can jump on Twitter now. And so I'm happy for them because they got the win, but mostly because they got the internet back in Indiana, because it's just it's 2022. You don't want to be going an extended period of time without internet.
True. Did you put them in your top 25 and one on Friday morning or no?
No.
Okay. You did.
No, I mean, they're 3-4 in the first two quadrants.
All right. Fair enough. A couple of things to know about this game. First of all, if you tell me that Indiana is going to fail to get, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see Nadas tossed up some of the box score here. Indiana's not going to crack 70 against Purdue and Trace Jackson Davis is going to play 11 minutes. I'm going to blindly tell you that Indiana's losing that game, but that is not what happened. Trace Jackson Davis did have foul trouble there, had just 4 points, but Rob Finnessy comes back. My Rage Against the Machine poster just fell behind me.
Well, it was a matter of time.
Chimes. Wait, what just happened? What was that?
I think you told us what happened. Your Rage Against the Machine poster fell down.
What you say? What you say? What you say? What?
Just announced a tour with Run the Jewels. Would you be interested in Rage and RTJ at Madison Square Garden?
I'd be interested in you buying that ticket for me because you still owe me a ticket. So, yes, we'll just I'll capitalize in on that. How about
maybe
that?
Maybe we'll go together.
Sounds good. I'm actually good for it. Where was I? Rob Phinisee, hero of the night. Career high, 20 points, man. Hits the winning bucket from the corner. Indiana gets its first win against a top five team at home since 2016 when it beat North Carolina. So maybe you can argue that that UNC win was the more recent important regular season development versus the Kentucky one. But they fled to the floor, my man. They rushed that court. It was only the second win in 9 years. Only the second win in 9 years for Indiana against Purdue. It's crazy. How'd they win? A couple reasons. Only three turnovers. That had been the lowest in a game for IU since 2006. Only three turnovers. That's good stuff there. Now, Purdue's offense has been highly ranked, Parrish, because of a couple, many reasons, but a couple of them being get plenty of production from the bench. That's in no small part because of Travion Williams. And also, they get to the line a ton, and they're a relatively good foul shooting team. Well, that didn't happen on Thursday. Indiana's bench outscored Purdue 35-4. Travion Williams was subpar for a third consecutive game. That's something to keep an eye on. He shouldn't be playing as poorly as for his level, his expectation, his ability as he's been. And then the foul shots, Indiana had 24. Purdue got to the line 17 times. Purdue came into the game having shot like 110 more foul shots this season than its opponents. It just dominates the free throw rate. Wasn't the case whatsoever. And because Williams wasn't good, and even without Trayce Jackson-Davis playing well, playing a lot of minutes, Indiana was narrowly better. Points in the paint, 30-28. So good stuff. Rob Phinisee, congrats on you, man. You're from Lafayette, Indiana. Four steals, four boards, career high 20. You hit the bucket. You finally get a win over Purdue. This is the kind of game that you're going to remember for the rest of your life, that people will talk to you and want to hear about for decades to come. Xavier Johnson also was pretty critical in this game as well. He had 18 and four boards. But yeah, good stuff for IU. That's a validating win. I know you said you don't have them ranked yet, but I'm not going to declare with 100% confidence that Indiana is going to the NCAA tournament. But a win like this certainly indicates that some bright days are ahead. This team would have gone had there been a 2020 tournament, but it didn't. So the fact remains that when Archie Miller was there, Indiana never participated in an NCAA tournament. This fan base hasn't experienced it since 2016, but I think 2022 is going to be the year that's a nice win for IU.
I did consider Indiana. Like, I took a look at it, but like I said, they're 3-4 in the first two quadrants. They're 1-4 in road games. You'll never believe where their one win is.
I'm blanking on it. What is it? Nebraska?
They walked in the Pinnacle Bank.
They walked in the Pinnacle. No one's walking in the Pinnacle right now. Nebraska's on a pause, by the way.
So they're 1-4 in road games, 3-4 in the first two quadrants. So just on the outside of the top 25 and one. A night before that, Marquette got a big win at Villanova. The Golden Eagles are now 13-6 overall, 5-3 in the Big East on a five-game winning streak. And that was Marquette's first win at the Pavilion. And Villanova's playing like almost all of its games, all but three of its games at the Pavilion, home games this season, because as you know, I think you, as I was Googling this the other night, I found like from maybe 2012, you wrote about this.
Yeah.
The way the NCAA tournament works is that you cannot play tournament games in your quote home arena. And a home arena is defined as anywhere you play more than three games. So Villanova is only going to play three games at Wells Fargo so that they're eligible to play in the East Regional in what is their de facto home arena. It's smart scheduling. So they're at the Pavilion a lot this season, and they lost their Wednesday night for the first time since November 2018. It was Marquette's first ever win at the Pavilion, and Villanova is now 30-3 in that building since there was a $65 million renovation. In other words, they almost never lose there, and they lost their Wednesday night to a Shaka Smart coach team that is overachieving relative to preseason expectations. They were picked ninth in the preseason Big East poll. Marquette was. Look better than that.
No doubt. Justin Lewis, big shot to win it. Marquette closed the game on a 7-0 run. Lewis finished with 21 points. Greg Elliott off the bench, who's been pretty solid as of late. He had 14 And man, Shaka Smart doing real well for himself in year one. You're right. Overachieving relative to preseason expectations. I didn't think Marquette was going to be in the NCAA tournament conversation at all at any point this season. I was wrong about that. If we built the field today, Marquette would have to be in with some room to spare there. Still, in this win carries a ton of cash, not just because it's won five in a row, but it's got a win at home over Seton Hall. Close, got it. Win at Villanova, close, got it. And now, as I mentioned, I think on the previous podcast, Xavier is next. That's a home game. We'll get to that in a few. At Seton Hall, at Providence, home to Nova, at UConn. There are gonna be some more losses that come, but Marquette's done well enough for itself. As we sit here and talk on Friday AM, Marquette 6-6 combined in quad one and quad two with a 5-4 record at the top. Quadrant one games. That's really, really good. Five quadrant one games is almost as many as any other team in the country. There's only one team with more. It's Baylor with six. Otherwise, Marquette is sitting there along the likes of just quad one wins. That's all we're talking about. Wisconsin, Auburn, Alabama, Iowa State. Those are the teams that have at least five wins against the toughest portion of their schedule. Good on Shaka. Marquette, I know those fans are fired up, man. Like that, this is kind of a vindicating feeling after you wanted to make a coaching change. You get Shaka Smart. There's a lot of anticipation, excitement that comes with this, but you're thinking, okay, maybe it takes till year two, year three at the latest, and here we are in the first year, and he's got him in the tournament conversation. We'll see if they can stay there, but they're looking good. They're looking good right about now. The only other one that you mentioned was what? UCLA winning late at Utah. Man, that game went late. I was fading. I held on barely. I didn't. Oh, I barely held on. Like Gonzaga pulled away from San Francisco. So that, you know, they actually won by 16 and the line was 16. Wouldn't you know it? And, but I was like, I got to see if UCLA is going to lose this or not. They didn't. They get a nice road win at Utah and Booth Gosh, not able to pull it out there. But yeah. But Johnny Juzang helps get into a 63-58 win. Juzang had 28 points in this game. Only one other Bruin had double figures. Jules Bernard had 14 there. So it was way late. I'm sure plenty of people watching this pod weren't able to stay up. And I don't blame you, but it's the first of two on the road. They'll play at Colorado this weekend. Will UCLA to kind of maintain their status? They're now 12-2, but that was a nice win. And Juzang, well, performances like this, he shouldn't need to do as much as he did there, but you keep doing this. UCLA stays highly ranked, good record. Get back into that All-American conversation. Oh, by the way, Arizona is the number three team in the country and destroyed Stanford on Thursday night too. So yeah. Let's not forget, like, Arizona's, they're quietly ridiculous and they're a top three team, at least according to the AP Top 25.
We got to adjust this Pac-12 schedule. I can't stay up late on Thursday nights, even when I want to. I try to.
It's impossible. Well, for you, it's impossible because you're up late Wednesday, then you got to fly. Like, it's just not
me. I'm up till 4 and awake at 7:30. Like, I sleep 3.5 hours on Wednesday night, every Wednesday night. And then I fly straight home, go straight to radio. By the time I get home, like, I'm lucky if I can put my kids to bed. In fact, last night I tried to lay down with one of my little guys and I was like, I'll just lay down until he falls asleep. I think I fell asleep before he did. I woke up at 2 a.m. like, well, I wonder if Gonzaga held on, you know, because I guess I saw the very beginning of that. And then I lay down with a second and then it was, you know, I woke up, it was 2 a.m. Now here we are. But Juzang, again, 28 of UCLA 63. He's now averaging 25 points per game in UCLA's last three contests, which is better than the 22.8 he averaged in that NCAA tournament run last season. As we sit here, his field goal percentage this season over last season is better. 3-point percentage, better. Points per game, rebounds per game, assists per game, all better. They've been a little bit off the radar because UCLA hasn't played a currently ranked team in nearly 2 months. And they didn't play for almost 4 weeks because of a COVID pause. But, you know, they're quietly, whatever that means, 12-2, and Johnny Juzang is having an All-American level season, even if he scores all his points on Thursday nights while I'm asleep. You ready for the final 4-1?
Yeah, why doesn't Nada hop in here, remind?
Last week was big. I took the lead finally.
I don't think that happened. But not do we have records from last week or just overall? What are we looking at right now?
All right. We are, because for some reason the crawl is wrong. I thought I updated it. At this point, GP is on a little bit of a surge. He's 17 and surging.
17
he's coming close. He's coming close. Norlander, you were 21 and 16. The fact that this is this close, this late, I mean, Norlander, you're going to have to step it up, man, just to keep clear and win this season.
All right. I think I'm pretty comfortable with this, but yeah. All right, let's roll.
If I can go 4-1 this week, that would put me at still one game under 500. No, it put me right at 500. I need a 4-1 week.
Tough for you.
Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern. Number 12, Kentucky at number 2. We're not saying number 2, Auburn. They shouldn't be number 2. That's goofy.
Facts, though.
I will ignore them. Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern. Number 12, Kentucky at number 1, Auburn, inside Chris Porter Arena. KenPom has it Auburn minus 3. You can watch it on CBS. It's America's most watched network. It's the network of stars.
Not only can you watch it on America's most watched network, folks, that man right there, going to be on sideline.
That's right.
You got a pre-production meeting with these teams later on today, or what's the deal?
Everything's on Zoom now. So,
yeah, but that's still going down, right?
Yeah, Bruce Pearl Zoom yesterday, John Calipari Zoom in the morning, and production Zoom meeting tonight. Everybody in the hotel at Auburn, but everybody on Zoom. Had to cancel a trip to Las Vegas to make it happen.
But did you see what transpired in Las Vegas?
Right. We weren't going to Las Vegas to see Adele, but since we were in Las Vegas and Adele's residency was starting, we were going to see Adele. And then we canceled our trip, and then Adele canceled her residency.
Exactly.
She was like, GP's not coming. No sense in doing this. By the way, I don't know how I feel about this Adele. It's not like she got COVID yesterday or, something abruptly happened. As she explains it, they've been running into issues for weeks, and now her show just isn't ready. She missed deadline and told everybody the day before it's supposed to start. There are people in Las Vegas right now, I promise you, who flew there.
Right.
To see Adele. We were going just to go. It's my birthday weekend. And then while we were there, we're like, hey, Adele's playing. Might as well go see Adele. But there are people who flew there to see Adele, and day before the first show, she's like, I can't do it. I missed deadline. This woman been out there begging people for months to go easy on her. Should we, though? Should we go easy on her?
I'll let the listeners decide with that. But I did find it quite interesting that you had to bail on Vegas, and then suddenly Adele's like, shows off. Shows off.
Yeah, she's like, oh, what? GP has got to go to Auburn instead of come to Vegas? Shows off. Can't do it. Not ready. Not ready to do it for an audience that doesn't include GP. That's more or less what she was saying.
It is Gary's birthday weekend, although I think technically his birthday is Monday.
That's true.
Maybe I'll have a little surprise in store for him on the Sunday show. You'll have to tune in and watch and find out. I did hop on the Auburn media call yesterday, I think. Because I wanted to ask Bruce if he felt as though this game was the biggest regular season one that he had been a part of since February of 2008 when he was coaching at Tennessee. And John Calipari, of course, was at Memphis. Bruce Pearl's Volunteers won that game, by the way. They beat Memphis in that classic 1-2 game. Pearl said it's the biggest game he's had at home since he's been, obviously at home, he's coached in the Final Four in the tournament, but biggest home game since he's been at Auburn. He also pointed out, and I didn't realize this, this is the only scheduled meeting this season between these teams. Kentucky and Auburn are not scheduled to play. Now, they could play each other again in the SEC tournament, so we could certainly get this again, but this is the only one that we know for sure we're getting there, so it carries a lot of significance. And Pearl said that Tennessee-Memphis game, like, it was, the environment was Super Bowl-like, but he said this one means more. It's, you know, we're not 1-2. That's not what it is there. But we are in the same conference. That was a non-conference game, and it means a ton locally for Memphis and Tennessee and the rivalry and all that stuff. Like it carried a ton of significance there, and we still talk about it all these years later. But Auburn and Kentucky are both in the SEC. Both can make the Final Four. Both can win the, you know, both can win this league. And so the game actually has real tangible meaning. So it was interesting to hear Bruce talk about that. As for the game and the pick, I can't wait for this. It's 1:30 game of the, I think it's one of the five biggest matchups heading in that we've had so far this season. Love this kind of stuff, man. We didn't see this coming 3 weeks ago. Kentucky's way on track. Number three in KenPom as we speak right now. The fact that it's at Auburn, I love it. Now, Rupp would have been fine, but that arena is going to be absurd, Parrish.
No, Auburn arena will be better than Rupp.
Correct.
My apologies to Kentucky fans, but it just will be.
This is going to be phenomenal. I love the fact that you are going and working sideline and get to experience this. Because I can't wait to hear your account of what it's like. No matter if it's an epic buzzer beater overtime game or one team wins by 20, I want to hear your account of what it feels like to be in that arena. This arena, by the way, is like all of a decade old. So it's definitely the biggest game in the history of this arena. Because Kentucky is narrowly ahead of Auburn in KenPom, the line is pretty respectable. GP told you before, Tigers -3. Ooh. I'm going to go with Auburn here. I'm going to go with Auburn to win and to cover, but I'm going to do it with some hesitancy because I'm a believer in UK. UK is actually fourth in KenPom as I talk right now, so there was some movement overnight with the results there. So only two spots separate these teams. I am way in on Kentucky and its ceiling. It got a win on the road, by the way, since we last talked at Texas A&M. Kind of won ugly first time this season. Kentucky didn't have a margin of at least 10 points and a victory there. But offensively, high-level team, still very good on defense. This should be a very well-played game. These are A-minus or better offenses and defenses. The battle between Kessler and Oscar Tshiebwe, I think, is going to be tremendous. What Kentucky does to try and offset Jabari Smith will be intriguing. And I think there's a chance that if Auburn does win this game, which is what I'm going to pick, win and cover, that maybe you see either Wendell Green have another really nice game. Maybe he's the star coming out of it. Katie Johnson has had no shortage of moments. Maybe it winds up being him, you know? Zepp Jasper, do we have a kind of situation where it's a truly unheralded player that comes up big in a big spot? I don't know. I just can't wait for this game. Give me the Tigers to win and to cover and to get to 18-1 in doing so.
Yeah, I would respectfully disagree that this is as big as that Memphis versus Tennessee game. First off, it was February, not January. It was 1-2. One of the teams was undefeated and therefore trying to become the first undefeated national champion since 76, which seemed, you know, possible given that if they get by Tennessee, they're not going to lose a Conference USA game. And then if they win the national championship, they would be undefeated national champions. They, of course, finished as a two-loss team because they lost to Tennessee, then lost to Kansas. College game day was there that morning. It was for a while and still might be the highest rated college basketball game ever on ESPN. I think that's
Earl
true.
Earl said in his media availability, he said he thought it was the second highest since that or something. So it's, yeah, it's really up there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I just like, this isn't that, but this is unbelievable. You know, because you've got an Auburn team that really might be playing to move to number one in the AP poll on Monday. Let me ask you this. If Auburn beats Kentucky, can you envision them jumping Gonzaga?
I thought about this last night. I actually can. If Auburn, particularly if it wins with some authority, then you might have some voters that might have had Auburn 2, 3, or 4 go to one, and then there were only four total points separated.
Right. That's the thing. Here's the thing. People think of it broadly speaking as, will Auburn jump Gonzaga? They don't have to on any ballots.
Right.
Just the goofies who voted Auburn 9th have to not do that again. And the goofies who voted Auburn 6th have to not do that again. So really it just takes a voter saying, ooh, I still think Gonzaga's number one, but I'm going to move Auburn from 4 to 2. And I'm going to move Auburn from 9 to 3. That's all it takes. And Auburn jumps Gonzaga in the AP poll and becomes number one for the first time in school history. I think with a victory over Kentucky, they'll do it. Not necessarily because people will flip the top of their balance and take Gonzaga and move them from number one, but because Auburn will move higher on some of these other ballots than they were this past Monday, and that'll be enough to give them the points to pass Gonzaga. In other words, even if the first place votes look exactly the same as they did last week, I think Auburn can jump Gonzaga just by moving up on other ballots. Standing room only tickets, by the way, priced above $200 each at StubHub.
Like nine and change, I think. I've never been there, but I believe it's like, yeah, one of those, like, not too big, not too small. Just
it's perfect. That's what a great college basketball arena should be. 9,000 seats is perfect. And I've never been there for a game. I have been there right after Bruce got the job. Family and I were on our way to the beach, and I talked my wife into driving through Auburn, Alabama, so I could spend the day with Bruce and his staff and, you know, get some work done. And so I've seen the arena, and it's great. I've never been there for a game, so I'm looking forward to it. On the court, Walker Kessler will be coming off a 15-point, 6-rebound, 6-block effort against Georgia. And, you know, that was his home state school. He's from Noonan, Georgia, which is like 40 miles southwest of Atlanta. So he's now averaging, Kessler is 17.5 points, 8 rebounds, 6.5 blocks in his past two games. You know what they call that, don't you, Deadleg? Breakthrough.
There we go.
He's breaking through just as predicted. I'll take Auburn to win, to cover, and to move to number one in the AP poll on Monday. I think all of those things happen. Game two, Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern. Number 5, Baylor at Oklahoma inside Taylor Griffin Center.
Mm.
Blake gets everything.
I agree. That's good.
Yeah, Taylor deserves something. KenPom has it Baylor -5. You can watch it on ESPN+.
I'll be quick on this. I'm going to go Baylor and Baylor definitively. Oklahoma has been in some games as of late. We identified their plights and some struggles on most recent podcast. But I'm going to trust Baylor. Now, we still don't know Jeremy Sohan and James Akinjo, their status. Don't know if they're playing in this game. But I'm going to say, I don't have this intel. I haven't been in touch with Bryce or Huck or Scott or anyone in the Drew family about this. I'm going to lean that Akinjo plays in this game. And with that presumption, give me Baylor to win and cover.
I meant to text Huck.
Well, he's a dog.
Yeah, but he can text. It's okay. A good dog.
Good dog. All right.
Huck's a good dog. He can text. I meant to text him. I actually do, as I'm looking at my notes here. I made most of these notes on my flight home yesterday. It says, text Scott and find out about Akinjo. I just forgot. I got busy. I just forgot. Like you mentioned earlier, Baylor's got 6 quad one wins. It leads the nation. 8-2 in the first two quadrants. That's why I still got them top 4 in the top 25-1. Oklahoma has lost 4 or 5. On a 3-game losing streak, past 2 losses to TCU and Kansas by a combined 4 points. So, like, close losses. 4 of their 6 losses have either come in OT or by 3 or fewer points. So that's rough. I mean, these are 1-possession, 2-possession situations. But I'm with you. I'll take, you know what? I'm not with you. I'll take Baylor to win. I'll take Baylor to win, but Oklahoma to cover. Baylor wins a tight game inside the Taylor Griffin Center. Game 3, Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern. Number 13, LSU, at number 24, Tennessee, inside Bruce Pearl Arena. He deserves it.
Oh, that's what's happening. Okay.
We're going to name Tennessee's arena after Bruce Pearl.
Okay.
Tennessee fans, they tell me on Twitter they would take him back right now.
I believe it. Tennessee, they got internet?
Oh, yeah. They got internet.
Okay.
Internet's fine. It was like a weird thing. Only in Indiana, they lost internet for 2 months.
Just making sure.
Yeah, no, Tennessee's fine. KenPom has it Tennessee -1. You can watch it on ESPN.
I've got it -2.
Okay, call it -2. I don't care. Just told you I made these notes yesterday on a flight. It must have changed overnight.
That's true. LSU's lost 2 in a row. Still got the number 1 rated. How about this? I don't know if you've noticed this or not. LSU has the number 1 defense in the country, and teams are shooting like almost half of their shots from 3-point range against the Tigers. And they're not shooting them well, by the way. The opponents are hitting 26% of their threes, but almost half of their shots are from. It's a fascinating defensive footprint, if you will. Still the best defense per possession adjusted in the country, according to KenPom. And that's been working for me. If you're curious as you listen, well, what does that mean for Tennessee? How good is it from 3-point range? Not good. 32.5% from beyond the arc. That's 218th in the United States of America and the world and our known universe. The Volunteers are purely pedestrian when they shoot the tray. but I will take Rick Barnes to get a win here. And if it does, if his team does, he'll have two wins this season over top 15 level kind of teams. They've also defeated Arizona. That is Arizona's lone loss at home. So give me the Vols to win and cover. I like this one. This is a certainly a tasty one. Auburn, Kentucky is the not just the headline game nationally, but also in the conference. This is a clear number two.
Tennessee has five losses, but all five are the top 20 KenPom teams,
including one at LSU 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, two Saturdays ago, right?
Not that competitive.
Yeah. Right. So they got five losses. All of them are the top 20 KenPom teams. So like quality losses, if you're into that kind of thing. None of the losses are at home. They're 9-0 at home with a win over Arizona. The only team to beat Arizona, and Arizona's beating everybody else's brains in. So I'm not going to pick Tennessee to lose at home. I'll take the Vols. Kennedy Chandler, my little homie from Memphis.
Yep.
Game four, Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Number 20, Xavier at Marquette inside Travis Diener Forum. KenPom has it Xavier minus one. You can watch it on FS1.
Xavier favored on the road against Marquette. Very interesting.
That's interesting.
Now,
funny business.
So we go by when we do the show on Friday mornings, the lines for Saturday, and this is a Sunday game. They have not come out yet. I think this is going to be a situation where X is favored on KenPom. The line is actually going to be Marquette minus one when it comes out. Could be wrong, but I think because of the win streak, the public will actually want to bet Marquette to win this game. And so the Golden Eagles will be favored. But for the purposes of this podcast, we are going by the projected line at KenPom.com. Xavier's only losses, neutral, Iowa State, and to Villanova twice. I'm not going against Marquette here. I'm going to go Marquette to win. And technically, for these purposes, it'd be straight up. But Xavier's solid. I think this could be this is the best game of Sunday, by the way, for an NFL divisional round weekend. This 2 o'clock tip on Fox Sports 1. It's only this, and then the lead-in to the playoffs on CBS. Michigan plays at Indiana. We're not picking that game, but just a heads up. The CBS basketball game on Sunday, Michigan at Indiana. That's interesting just to see if Indiana can continue its momentum after the win on Thursday night. So those are the only two you really need to know about of like real consequence, I feel, on Sunday. I will take Marquette and to win and to cover, and Justin Lewis to continue to be awesome. He's been their best player, the most important player this season. But Daryl Morrisell has also been pretty critical of the Maryland transfer, and I expect him to show up well in this game as well. Close one, Marquette wins.
Marquette's on the verge of the top 25 and one. This could push them there.
It should push them there if they win.
There'd be a 6-game winning streak. They would improve to 7-6 in the first two quadrants with zero additional losses. Right now they have 5 quadrant one wins. That would take them to 6. Stakes are pretty clear. Marquette wins, they go to the top 25 and one. You agree?
Yes.
Travis Diener Forum should be electric, given that the proud Golden Eagles are coming back home after a really nice win at Villanova. It's just a lot of stuff to deal with, don't you think?
It's a ton.
It's a lot of stuff to deal with for Xavier. I think Marquette wins and covers. Wrong team favored. If we're saying Xavier's favored, it's a wrong team favored situation.
We're on the same page again.
It's going to be hard to catch you if we're often on the same page.
But be intellectually honest. Pick the team that you actually think is going to cover here.
I don't want to be honest anymore. I'm tired of being honest.
If you want to switch this up for next week and you make the first pick you pick first. I'm going to pick whoever I think. I'm not going to try and have any gamesmanship with it. So it's up to you.
You see where being honest has gotten me, don't you?
Yeah, it's gotten you to Auburn, Kentucky on the sideline on Saturday.
How about that? I never thought of it that way. I never thought of it that way.
All right. So we both got Marquette with the win. Reminder, if you're watching this on YouTube, if you're watching it live, or if you come later in Friday or Saturday morning, do tap that like button and
smash it.
You can smash it. Yeah, you can smash it for sure. We appreciate you so much, and thanks for helping us to continue to grow the channel. This was and is the first college basketball podcast ever to go to video. Not enough people talk about that. Tell the people in Indiana. Let them know.
It's actually the first podcast to ever be on video. We are the first two people to ever make a video.
Okay. You're going that far.
Folks don't realize that. Okay. We're the first people to ever be on video. We started doing it a few months ago, and now Adele's doing it.
There we go.
To announce cancellations.
Before I give you my N1,
go easy on me.
I know.
How about you give us a little heads up before you cancel your residency? Then we'll go easy on you. You can't cancel the day before and then be like, go easy on me. Yeah, you know what?
There we go.
Oh, you know what? I don't know if you deserve for us to go easy on you, Adele.
Before I get to my game, which is a fun one, a mid-major special, here's what you need to know the rest of the week. Friday night, Illinois will play at Maryland at 7 Eastern. Kofi Coburn is not going to play in that game. He did not travel with the team. There have been reports that he has had it. He suffered a concussion. No Coburn at Maryland. Probably figure Illinois is going to win that, but maybe it's a little tricky, a little close. The big game of Friday is Michigan State at Wisconsin, 9 Eastern, Fox Sports 1. It's the 150th time these schools have met. Who do you think leads the all-time series, GP?
What game?
Oh, my gosh. Michigan State at Wisconsin, 9 Eastern, Friday, Fox Sports 1.
I think Wisconsin leads the all-time series.
You're very wrong. Michigan State, 83-66.
I thought the only reason you would ask that is because it wouldn't be the obvious answer.
Got into you. Twisted you around. That's right. That's a wonderful Big Ten matchup there. And both those teams are tied atop the league ledger. That's a Friday game. We are not picking it. I'm just letting you know. Saturday, the ones where you're not picking.
Don't pick Friday games. I thought about it. I was like, don't do it. That's not something I do.
That is a really good game. We'll be at least I'll be locked into it. West Virginia, Texas Tech, noon Eastern on ESPN2. Kind of feels like West Virginia might win that one. Just a little bit of a hunch. Florida State at Miami is a 2 Eastern tip on Saturday on ESPN. Really nice game between a couple of bubble teams, and I'll be intrigued to see what Miami can do after beating North Carolina earlier this week. Kansas will play at K-State, 4 Eastern, ESPN+. Plus. If K-State is actually going to try and be a bubble team coming out of the Big 12, and that league's going to try and send 9 to the tournament, which I don't think is going to happen, winning at home against Kansas would certainly give us another plot twist there. UNC at Wake Forest, 8 Eastern. ACC Network Saturday night. Steve Forbes on track to return for that game. He did not coach in Wake Forest's game earlier this week. UNC is in a tough spot here. Hubert Davis, probably thankful that Penny Hardaway is a mess right now with Memphis because Hubert Davis might be kept. Now, I'm not saying he deserves it, but Carolina fans, I think, are a little bit just, we've got a little bit of anxiety over how bad their team is away from home. And now they're going to go play at the Joel. And that arena is going to be rocking. Wake Forest trying to make the tournament for the first time in an eon. A&M at Arkansas, 8:30 Saturday night, SEC Network. A couple of bubble teams out of the SEC. Winner's going to be in a much better spot than the loser, in my opinion, in that spot. A&M is yet to prove to us they've got one real win of legitimacy. And then two more on Saturday. UCLA at Colorado, 9 Eastern, Pac-12 Network. Parrish has no shot. Never. And then great mid-major game. I almost picked this one. Boise State at San Diego State is a 9:30 tip on CBS Sports Network. Boise State is one of the hottest teams in the country. GP, do we know how many games Boise State has won in a row?
9.
11 consecutive wins for the Broncos. You do not have them ranked, do you?
I do not.
I would argue that if...
Can't rank everybody, dead leg.
I know, but if Boise State gets to 15-4 and beats San Diego State on the road after beating Utah State on the road, they're going to have a really, really, really good case. Mountain West... streaking toward a 4-bid league, by the way, this season. Boise State, San Diego State, Colorado State's 14-1, and the Wyoming Cowboys at 14-2. Give it up for them. Give it up for them.
I saw you rank them.
Damn straight I did. Power ranking. They've been hot as of late. Going to reward them. 4 of the past 5 wins, not at home. Did you see what, by the way, this happened purely coincidentally, but did you see what Ken Palm had tweeted about that?
I did not.
Do you have USC ranked in your top 25-1?
I do.
Okay, Ken Palm basically made the statement, the commentary that from a resume and standpoint, USC and Wyoming almost have, there's almost nothing different about them. But the only reason why Wyoming isn't considered a ranked team at this point is predictive metrics. It's 58 at Ken Palm, and there was no preseason expectation for what Wyoming would be. But if you were actually going to rank them based on what they've done relative to their schedule, Wyoming, USC are very, very close. So I thought that pretty intriguing. And give it up to Jeff Linder. Year 2, Cowboys. They're probably going to go to the tournament. They're 14-2. They're going to play New Mexico on Saturday. Mountain West is a quality league this season. And yeah, that's basically that. All right. Want my game 5?
I do.
Saturday.
Considering we can't end this until we get it, I definitely
Saturday,
want it.
4 Eastern. This game's going to be going down at Leon Barmore Arena.
Oh, wow.
Where did Leon Barmore play? The answer is Louisiana Tech. We've got UAB minus one at La Tech, a CUSA special. Both these teams are actually pretty damn good. UAB is higher in KenPom right now. They're 43rd with a 15-4 record. Louisiana Tech, 78th, but with a 15-3 record. CUSA is almost certainly going to be a one-bid league, but something to keep an eye on here. The line is Louisiana Tech minus one. You got Eric Conkle's Bulldogs, or you got AK, Andy Kennedy's Blazers in this one?
AK against EK.
That's correct.
I like both these guys a lot. I like these teams. It's a good game.
It is. I wanted to give, a little highlight to a couple of teams that could be on the 12 line, 13 line when we get to Selection Sunday, capable of winning the game in the tournament. And this is a huge game in Conference USA. This will be one of the two or three biggest games on the league schedule. So give a little love here, a little preview. And what you got?
Louisiana Tech's only losses are to Alabama, NC State, LSU.
Yes, and all of those happened obviously away from home because none of those teams would ever play those games at Louisiana Tech's arena.
Nobody would go to Ruston voluntarily.
Nope.
You only go to Ruston if you're forced to. And I don't mean that as a shot at Ruston, the city. I mean that you don't want to play Louisiana Tech in a true road game. I hope that doesn't get misinterpreted. Yeah, I'm not picking against Louisiana Tech at home. I'll take the Bulldogs at home.
I, too, am going to take the Bulldogs at home. I'm sorry, GP, but I have to. They'll have the best player on the floor, Kenneth Lofton, who's been...
I love Kenny Lofton. I loved them both. Very different athletes.
Exactly.
one was a base stealer, and the other is 6'7", 275.
But we love it, man. Jordan Walker, by the way, at UAB is a real baller as well. Don't want to shortchange him. He's quite good. This should be a fantastic game. 4 Eastern on Saturday. But we do agree that Louisiana Tech is gonna get the win. As we wrap, I just want to note this one headline. UConn has 9 days now to find $11 million to pay Kevin Ollie. So Ollie won his arbitration case, and he was fired in March 2018. Ollie is currently working and coaching with that Overtime Elite, but UConn lost.
I'm glad they lost.
I know. I wonder where the hell they're getting now. They're going to have to find the money and get the money. But that's a hell of a lot of money to find and pay out. And like not literally, they have 9 days to do this. But the whole situation was, UConn tried to fire him for cause for NCAA violations, tried to get out from under it. This kind of case gets a lot of attention and curiosity in college athletic circles because, frankly, this kind of stuff like. ADs are going to want to know if they can pull a fast one. They did. UConn was Dave Benedict was not able to do this at UConn. Kevin Ollie is going to get paid. He did have a nice statement that said he still like always will appreciate and love his alma mater and his UConn family, which is good. But this is a strained relationship, and it was really sad it went this way. But Kevin Ollie, pay that man his money.
Right. You can't stand by Jim Calhoun all those years while NCAA violations are happening and then say you're firing Kevin Ollie for cause for what amounts to minor violations. Like, get out of here. Like, he did a bad job after he won the national championship. I understand why they fired him. But, like, you had a contract. And if you wanted to fire him without cause, which is the only reason you had to fire him for basketball reasons, then you got to pay him your money. That's the way this stuff works. Next time, be smarter about who you're giving contracts to. So I'm glad Kevin's getting his money. It was ridiculous. I mean, I understand UConn trying it, I guess, but it was always going to be a long shot, and they deserve to lose the case as it is.
Yep.
Where do you get $11 million? Maybe call Caron Butler.
I don't know if that's going to happen.
Maybe call a Mecca Okafor.
Yeah. I don't know. Russ Steinberg in the chat. Shouts to Russ. Won first place USBWA Writing Awards. Good to see you. He says the Boneyard fundraiser coming. The Boneyard, classic UConn message board. Classic. You ever dip into the occasional message board, see what's going on there?
No.
Memphis? No?
No, it does not. I don't have the time or the interest. My experience with...
I do. The Boneyard is the one exception. Like once a month, I'll just be like, what are they talking about the Boneyard these days?
No, Russ my Simon experience with message boards...
So I had to give him a shout there. His side gig is
there's like a Memphis Facebook page, Memphis basketball Facebook page, and people are like, oh, you got to go look at that. And I went in there like one time, and it is wild. I mean, crazy people.
Like, I have no idea what they're talking about. I was like, there is no way I'm spending my time doing this. So I'm out of all of it. Like, I see stuff on Twitter, but you're not going to find me messing around on message boards too much or Facebook groups too much. I find it to be almost entirely a waste of time. Just makes you dumber, never smarter.
Fair. Before we get out of here, RIP Meatloaf. You don't strike me as a Meatloaf fan, though.
I'm aware that he existed. I know some of his big songs, but like, no, you're never going to find me like walking through Terminal B listening to Meatloaf on my AirPods. Died of COVID.
Did he really?
Yeah. Spending months ranting against COVID vaccine mandates, he died of COVID.
So did that's, not realize that was the case. Yeah. Is well, what's always bothered me was he said he'd do anything for love, but he won't. He wouldn't do that.
What was that? What was the thing he wouldn't do for love? That?
And you can't say I'll do anything, but I won't do that. And what was that?
Munch.
Getting vaccinated.
Maybe it was vaccinated. Maybe it was vaccinated.
That was a legitimately great record, though.
What would he not do for love?
I don't know. That was Bound Bad Out of Hell 2, by the way.
Has anybody ever figured out what Meatloaf would not do for love? He said, I'll do anything for love, but I won't do that. What is that? Fill in the blank. Make that a Wordle.
Did you do today's Wordle?
Yes, knocked it out at fifth try.
Same. Five tries. What was your first word?
I saw an article where they were giving you all the great words to use first.
Yeah.
So I used one of those. I don't remember what it was.
I mean, you don't remember what you used this morning.
I can tell you. I mean, I can look it up. Let me look it up.
I started with group, G-R-O-U-P.
Started with group. Word. Let me see. I started with stare.
As in to look or to walk up?
To look, S-T-A-R-E. Okay. And then I went with ruble.
Ruble?
Yeah. And then I went with wrong. And I'm going to stop there because I don't want to give it away.
That's right.
The other day on radio, I gave the word away, and people were like legitimately mad at me.
Yeah, we told you this.
I know.
Although I feel like once you get to like 6 o'clock at night, time's up.
Well, this was roughly 6 o'clock at night.
Time's up at that point.
Well, that's what I thought too. Like you should have done your Wordle already, but then somebody was like, "I like to do Wordle at dinner. I like to sit down, have dinner, and do Wordle. That's my routine. And you've ruined it for me." And I was like, "Well, I'm sorry," because I was like, "I shouldn't have done that." But then I was like, change your routine.
Yeah, it's true. You know, right, I'm going to have something for you on the podcast on Sunday, just so you know.
I can't wait for that.
When do we want to? Hey, let's let people know right now, though. Do we want to do another early one? Maybe squeeze it between. The NFL games are like 3 and 6:30. Maybe get that. You want to do? There's no good. We're clear as early as 4:30 Eastern.
Commit to this? You want to commit to this? We will start as soon as the first playoff game's over.
Or the first play. Now, let's start as soon as the first playoff game has been decided.
Well, that's up for interpretation.
Once we know it's over, it's over. If you're listening and you want to watch live on Sunday, we had very good live viewership on Sunday during the last playoffs. We're gonna go head to head again. Let's go head to head with the NFL playoffs.
Yeah, that worked so well.
We're going head to head, man.
Yeah, we started a podcast on video and decided we'd go head to head with NFL playoff games. Genius. First
college podcast ever to go to video and the first one to ever say, bring it on NFL. Bring it on. So your window, if you're listening, if you're watching, if you want to watch us live, I'd say that window is going to be around 5 Eastern, 5:30 on Sunday, depending how close that Rams-Bucks game is leading into the Sunday night game, which is also on CBS. That's Bills versus Chiefs. So there we go.
We'll go heads up against Patrick Mahomes. I'm sure it'll work well for us. Nance and Romo against Parrish and Norlander. Round two. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Jimison Morgan, legend. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys for listening to the Island College Basketball Podcast in the middle of the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. We lost Meatloaf.
We did.
Moment of silence.
Imagine being an international rock star and you're named after just the most mediocre of protein dishes.
I like meatloaf.
Get it out of here.
Oh, I get down with meatloaf.
Definitely don't.
Definitely ooh, do. I like meatloaf.
I'm a pescatarian, and one of the five dishes most responsible for that decision that I made more than two decades ago, the meatloaf.
Love meatloaf. I would never name myself meatloaf, but I do enjoy munching on meatloaf.
His name is Robert Paulson, GP.
Well, that's his problem.
You know,
moment of silence. What?
Robert Paulson.
What about
Robert Paulson? Was the character the character in Fight Club in the scene with meatloaf?
Oh yeah, I don't remember that.
Okay.
Have no recollection. I mean, I have a recollection of Fight Club, but not of that specific thing. Although when I was reading about meatloaf's untimely death earlier today, it did mention Fight Club. Moment of silence for meatloaf.
Hey guys. Oh, big gulps, huh? All right. Well, see you later.
That was cruel.
No, it was just after the moment of silence. That's all.
Lost meatloaf to COVID. Too bad. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. 5 stars at both places. You can write a review over at Apple. Please do. Say something nice. There's more of us than there are of them. That's been established. They can shame us if they like. But there's more of us than there are of them. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. Easy to find. Type in Ion College Basketball Podcast in YouTube. Boom, pops right up. While you're watching an episode, please make sure to smash the like button. Brandon Davies would do it. He'd risk everything just to smash. He did it. You're not risking anything. So please do that for us. Make sure you get the alerts, notifications. That way you know exactly when we're getting ready to do what it is we do. And we will talk to you again on Sunday. Till then, take care.
Hey everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. men's national team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast. And I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me. And also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Vuori gear is designed to look great in everyday life while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the men's Sunday performance jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.